Hey, yo, this is Mr. Phil Anastasia, and you're rocking with We Heart Music, because we heart music, baby. Yeah!
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I proudly present for your listening pleasure, We Heart Music Radio.
This is Bo with We Heart Music Radio. This is episode 22, and I got a couple of notes saying that I never really talk about myself, so I'm going to do a quick introduction of myself. I'm Bo from, it's spelled V-U, but it's pronounced Bo, and I'm based out of the beautiful, sunny Minneapolis, Minnesota, and or aka I like to tell people I'm from Earth, if they ask. So, and I kind of started We Heart Music. I have on the line here Derek.
Hey folks, Derek Peggert Skyping in from, not Earth.
And we have Brian on the phone, a.k.a. Sue.
Hello.
Hey, and also Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Alex, because I don't think we've been properly introduced to everybody.
Yeah, we haven't. Well, I live here in Boise, Idaho with Brian, and we're in a band together and stuff, but we'll get to that later, I guess. I don't know, I just do tech support and play music.
Really? Tech support for what kind of company? Can I ask, or is that, can you
Yeah, about? I actually do tech support for Apple.
Do you know, have you heard any rumors about the latest iPhone?
Not really about, like, the iPhone itself, but I know that they're having some event on the 9th, Tuesday, down in San Francisco.
You know what's interesting, Bo? I actually do tech support for Apple, too.
Oh, you do? No way.
Hey, that's crazy. Are you kidding?
Yep. Welcome to the wonderful world of, talking to... there must be at least 100 billion Apple tech support people, because I swear to God, every time I turn around, I'm meeting another one.
They got us all over the world.
Maybe we should look into a new career, Brian.
Yeah, it's Apple.
Have you guys heard about the latest gossip about Michael Jackson seeing Pamela Anderson?
Whoa.
Whoa, really?
That doesn't surprise me nearly as much as it should.
Well, you know what kind of scares me about this story is that I'm thinking of the babies.
You're right. It'd be like a G.I. Joe 12-inch figurine.
I don't even really want to think about that, because it's, you know, it was frightening enough that Michael Jackson reproduced in the first place. Although, again, I'm still not quite sure those kids are even his, or for that matter, even human. Well, I'm pretty convinced that that's Michael Jackson no longer survives. I think he actually died a number of years ago and was transplanted into some kind of strange robot body that's, you know, sort of falling apart. And then, on the other hand, you've got Pamela Anderson, who's got to be one of the most plastic people in the world. My God, if they had a kid, it would probably like pop out like a Barbie doll.
Have you guys heard about Guns N' Roses calling out, basically imprisoning a blogger?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Okay, so I'll fill you in if you guys don't know. Basically, some blogger had leaked their album online, and instead of just requesting him to take it down, they had asked the FBI to bust down his doors and arrested the guy on $10,000 bond. And when they asked former Guns N' Roses guitarist Slash what he thinks about it, he says, and I quote, "I hope he rots in jail. It's going to affect the sales of the record, and it's not fair. The internet for what it is, and what you have to deal with it accordingly. And I think it's the same thing as if somebody has stolen something. It's theft." What do you guys think?
Metallica Part 2. Guns N' Roses hasn't even been vaguely relevant in over a decade. That hideous, hideous performance they did on MTV a while back, when it was supposedly their, return to the stage or something like that, and the abortive tour that they attempted after that, pretty much, you know, honestly, if nothing else in the world can convince you that Guns N' Roses is over and done with and just dead, that pretty much would have done it. And now, supposedly, some guy somehow managed to get some tracks out of it and out of the recording studio and post them on the internet, and they got the FBI involved. I mean, that's like the only way to describe that is that's some repugnant shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the very definition of extreme overreaction.
I kind of think, you know, they just don't know how to deal with the current musical climate. I mean, if you can't handle your shit getting, like, posted on the internet and all that, I mean, you probably just shouldn't be making music. But, you know, if they're not going to release Chinese Democracy, you know, at least someone is.
Yeah. Dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Now, I wanted to mention that I don't think this is going to affect Guns N' Roses album sales at all. I don't even know why they're even worried about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think that album's going to sell any copies anyway.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, I don't think they have any right to be even be afraid that one guy leaking the album is going to affect them in the least, I don't think. Because they're at a point where they can pretty much sell anything that they put their name on, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I
mean, no, I'm not so sure about that. Metallica felt the same way a number of years ago, too, and even though their records continue to sell, God knows why, the music is absolute garbage. And as a matter of fact, when I found out that the long-awaited Chinese Democracy, although I don't know if that's the actual name they're going to release it under, had made it out, of course I went and tracked down a copy myself. Gave it a listen just to see, you know, if it was actually worth the wait. And it's crap. That's what's going to affect their sales. Not the fact that some guy actually, you know, leaked the album out or anything of that sort. Honestly, if I would have gone into a store, bought this album, came home and listened to it, I'd be driving back to the nearest Target or FYI or wherever the hell I got as quickly as possible to return the damn thing. And if they wouldn't take it back, I would just leave it there. It's crap.
You know what? Sometimes, though, leak albums are also, I guess, demos, and sometimes it might affect perception of the album when a leak copy comes out and it sounds like crap. It gives a bad impression on the actual
album.
Yeah,
true.
So it is kind of disconcerting, but relating to this, speaking of Metallica, I think Lars have taken back his opinion on the internet. Brian, why don't you fill me in on this?
Well, yeah, it's like they've apparently welcomed the leaking of their new album, which I guess it's a step forward. It's too bad they took Napster with them.
Alex, do you have any opinion on this?
I just think it's sort of like, I don't know, it just seems sort of like a... I don't know, just go back to the political campaign a few years ago. These guys are flip-flopping on, like, a key issue here. It's like, you know, do you want your music on the internet or do you, you know, not want it? And it's like, you know, they can't make up their mind. It just seems like it's sort of one of those things where they weren't quite really... They didn't quite think of the whole, like, positive aspects of it before they, you know, started suing Napster and just, like, being like, we don't want our music on the internet. And then now it's like they've sort of seen what's happened to, like, more, like, independent music... And, you know, they want their proverbial piece of the pie, I guess. That's
so
kind of what it seems like
saying,
to me.
They want their pie and eat it, too.
Yeah.
You know, for the longest time, though, that band did not allow any of their music to be online, to be purchased online. And it actually had led a lot of people to basically pirating the music.
Exactly.
And, in fact, actually, only in 2006 did they come... to an agreement with, you know, all the major music label to have it online, and now people are buying it legally online. But they also, I think in some ways, Lars is taking a huge step forward in admitting that, hey, you know, it's that's the way that it is nowadays, and
mm-hmm.
that he kind of welcomes that his album's being leaked, and in fact, actually, I think in some ways encourages people to share it, because he realized that it's more like a promotional thing.
Well, I mean, they realize that Saint Anger tanked. I mean, they're quite aware of, like, the reasons for that. I mean, other than it completely blowing, but...
Oh, the last
you know, they're aware that, like, people were angry at them, and, you know, they don't want that anger directed their way when they're trying to sell albums, sell concerts, you know.
Sell t-shirts and stuff. And it's like... I mean, the Brian Jonestown Massacre, they released a copy, like a pre, sort of a pre, like, release of their latest album, My Bloody Underground, like, probably 8 months before it came out, like, on CDs and stuff like that. I mean, I still went out and bought the record when it came out, you know?
That's true.
Because I wanted to have, like, that tangible, like, copy, you know? So.
The mix sounded better on the record.
Yeah, you know? It did. It's true.
That is true that most people, fans especially, are going to buy your music regardless if they have a copy of digitally or, you know? Because I
definitely, if it's on a vinyl record, I'll purchase it.
And the people who aren't buying the records are not, you know, really fans. I mean, they're not buying anyone's record anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's tempting to say too little too late, but at the same time, it very clearly shows that, you know, hey, a band can learn from its mistakes. It's very clear that Lars and the guys are, you know, now realizing that, hey, you know, the way that the music industry is changing is for the benefit of themselves as musicians. And I'm betting, now mind you, I haven't heard anything at all from the new album because I pretty much after the Black album, I have not had any interest in Metallica whatsoever. But I think I'll check it out, and it may actually turn out to be good, so I'd probably go out and get it. But the only way to find out, of course, is to see if I can find a copy of it online, listen to it, and see whether or not it's actually worth picking up. But just as Brian said a little bit ago, even when you get an album online, a lot of albums get leaked out before the album, the official album date. And to me, though, every time I've heard something that gets leaked like that and I really like it, as soon as it's available, I go out and pick it up.
Ooh, Barracuda.
Heart have joined the growing numbers of musicians who's asked the Republican Party to stop using their music. Sarah Palin, who is recently was in Minnesota actually for the Republican convention, used the song Barracuda because her nickname is actually Sarah Barracuda. For her to promote her image, and Heart issued a press release asking them to please stop using our songs. I just think this is actually really funny. I don't know what you guys.
I'm actually concerned, really. Like, is that really the image you want? Like, the vice presidential candidate promoting? Like, oh yeah, I'm a vicious fish. It's going to come through and, you know, be.
Eat your flesh.
Yeah. It's like, is that really who we want, like, in charge over here? Like, I don't know. Like,
I mean, that's what you get when you, you know, run platforms that pretty much alienate everyone who's paying attention, which is often artists, musicians. I mean, the Republican platform has traditionally, well, last few years at least, has been kind of shitty. I can see entirely why musicians wouldn't want their music, like, associated with it. If I was big enough, I'd probably say the same thing. Like, screw you guys. I mean, it's kind of at this point, all they've really got is, like, Ted Nugent and some really bad country musicians.
Not to mention that reggae artist. I forget his name. Well, anyway, what makes this song kind of interesting is that it's written by the two sisters, who was the song's actually about a musician and women in particular, the Barracuda representing the business, and it's kind of a empowering kind of song.
It's an empowering song, but it's a song empowering women to take control of things and to basically rebel against the stiff, stodgy corporate world. And if
irony.
Basically the Republican Party 100% stands for stiff, stodgy corporate world. So it's incredibly ironic that this song is being used as a sort of, you know, an anthem for their own party. That's about the biggest piece of irony I've run into in weeks.
Brian, Alex, tell us about your band.
We're called Meat Extender. Right. We're kind of out of the ashes of another band called Mystic Crystal Revelations. We added some members and kind of decided, hey, let's play punk rock. Yeah.
Are we talking old school punk rock? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of like if half of Black Flag and half of the Ramones like met up, didn't play their instruments as well, and like decided they were going to play faster, and like had Ian MacKaye on vocals.
I don't sound that good.
No, I'm actually a huge old school punk fan, and I think reading some of your influences, I'm very excited actually to kind of download.
We keep the flame alive.
What is it?
I said we keep the flame alive. Okay, we're bringing back that 83 shit.
Bring it back.
Never left.
Where can we get your music?
Well, as of right now, we're pretty much just putting it all online on our MySpace page for free, and you can download it there, but our plans are kind of, we have a split 7-inch that'll probably come out by the end of the year with this band in New York called Contact Kiss, and we'll have information on where you can get that pretty next couple months, probably.
Yeah, it's in the works. We've also, I think you may be able to track us down on Last.fm if you really try hard enough.
All right. Have you guys looked into cutting it on vinyl, right? You say you're going to release a split. How expensive is that, actually? Because I'm kind of curious myself.
Well, we just had a bunch of friends, actually, in another band. They did a split with us, some other groups around here in Boise. They actually did a split. It was like a four-way split with four of the local punk bands, and I guess they got 250 copies of it, or no, they got 50 copies. Sorry for they got 50 copies for about $250 or something like that. I think
something like that.
I think it's sort of like a $100, or maybe it was a five way. So I don't know, but it seems to be about sort of come out to about $5 or like a 7-inch.
Okay, so $5 a 7-inch, that's definitely affordable, but I've noticed that, like, I buy a lot of 7-inches, and those sell for about $3, so aren't you kind of losing money in a way?
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't really exactly remember the exact numbers that they had on those. Maybe it was more like they paid $250 and got 100 of them.
Okay.
I don't really...
That sounds quite reasonable.
We don't. Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest.
Thanks. You're definitely going to do CDs and stuff too, right? I mean...
I don't know. Well, depending on, you know, I'd feel kind of bad selling someone a CD or even actually, like, using a blank, you know, CDR for, you know, 8 minutes of stuff. You know, like, you know, just that 20 minutes of music, I just sort of feel like it was a waste of all the disc, like, space, you know, so...
Besides, I don't really feel too good about selling digital copies of music. I'd rather just, you know, keep that free.
You know, I totally agree with you. I think if I were in a band that, given it, because to me, the cost of distributing a digital file costs me nothing. And that, if I was...
Well, I mean, there's that nominal, like,
right,
little...
there's that unspoken value to it, I know, but... I'm just saying, like,
cost.
As far as...
I do virtually nothing.
Exactly. And I'm just saying, like, I can understand why CDs would cost something, because you have to recoup that cost of printing it on a CD and you know, distributing it. But with the music file, it just seems to me that the cost is so minimal that, you know, I don't know. I totally think they should use it for more of a promotional thing. You know, you're giving away music on the radio all the time. You know, why not the same way?
Yeah, it's like if you just, you know, if you sell someone like an MP3 or something, I mean, you're pretty much kind of ripping them off, really, I think, because it's like they don't get the artwork, they don't get the liner notes.
Yeah, there's nothing tangible, it's just all ones and zeros.
Yeah, that's actually my argument right there.
Usually sounds bad, too.
That is true.
No matter how high the sample rate, you're still going to lose some of this wave, the sound wave.
One last thing I wanted to ask you, are you guys playing any gigs or anything coming up or anything?
Late September.
Yeah, we hope to have something going by late September. We just kind of need to, we've only got about 4 or 5 songs now. We just need to kind of work on a couple more. Okay. We just need to kind of get them down a little better and, you know, find somebody that wants to let us play in their living room.
I guess my question is, have you guys talked to any clubs and stuff? I mean, how hard is it
most of the clubs here are 21 and over, and basically we don't want to play 21 and over shows, because it's like the bands that do that here kind of have like this regular circuit going on, and it's just kind of like this circle jerk of old men just kind of like fading into increasing irrelevance. And I mean, that's not what we want the punk scene here to be. I mean, the metal scene, the indie rock scene, both have just kind of gone in this really kind of disgusting direction.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be a part of that. I mean, we want to, you know, play to anyone of any age.
Yeah, who's interested in our music, because that's really what the more important thing is it's not like, you know, oh, we played at this club or we played at that club. It's like, yeah,
we sold
tore this place. We pretty much tore these people's like house down, like rocking out, you know, with all these kids going wild and shit.
Buck wild.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, you know, maybe you guys can start like a scene. What is the scene like in Idaho? I guess is my
not
question.
Bad actually.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much punk rock. I mean, if you don't like punk rock, there's not much for you here, but, you know,
becoming a little more, I don't know, it's definitely changed from what it was like when I was 16. Like, when I was 16, it was like everybody was into, like, bands like The Casualties and The Virus. It was all, like, street punk sort of stuff, and now that seems like it's sort of taken a back seat to more just, like,
there's lots of underground hardcore here. There's, like, Manville, they kind of do, like, a punk rock and roll thing. Is really cool. There's Hummingbird of Death. They do sort of a power violence sort of thing.
Like really fast, thrashy stuff.
Unhallowed has been around forever. They're one of our friends' bands. Actually,
one of our members is
their singer.
It seems to be like it's sort of going to more of like a, we don't necessarily care what the music sounds like as long as, you know, it's like DIY.
And it's
ass
fun.
And it's people can have fun listening to it and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, who are some of the more famous, I guess, punk Idaho band that's coming out?
Well, there's this band that's been around for a while that you may have heard of called, like, Torn Anus.
You wouldn't have heard of them.
Yeah, probably not. But I guess it's funny because we actually heard one of the guys that plays drums in that band is actually in that band Manville that Brian just mentioned in that. It's funny because we were talking to him recently.
Kids in Manville are in, like, everything.
Yeah, it's funny, but we were talking to him the other day, and I guess somehow, like, that band Torn Anus is really just sort of a joke that, like, these guys kind of started to do.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess they actually, somebody got in contact with them and actually flew them to Austin, Texas to play, like, 3 shows at the South by Southwest Festival. For this band that, like, to them was just, like, a total joke, you know, something that they do just messing around on the weekend.
Well, I love that name, by the way. That's an awesome name.
You should see their t-shirts.
Oh, anyway. Do you guys have any last words or anything you want to mention?
I don't know, just
see Kevin.
I guess just check us out on MySpace, and if you like it, add us to your friends. If not, we don't care either way.
No, we care. We'll come to your house.
Attitude, right?
Yeah, sure, we will. We don't have anything better to do.
Hey, if you guys are out in the Pittsburgh area and want to play my backyard or basement or anything like that, I mean, feel free to. I'll bring a whole bunch of friends over.
Nice. Someday.
Yeah, someday.
Hello, this is Inga Swearingen, and you're listening to We Heart Music. He was all alone in a pool of spotlight, standing there with closed eyes. And then when he opened up his mouth and the music poured right out, you could hear the darkness within his heart as he was up there sketching something beautiful. You know that I won't stand still. Never sits around, always trying a new sound. Bobby lays that groove down. He can be the melody and bass. He can weave a mood as fine as lace. You can hear the gladness within his heart for doing what he loves to do. To make fine music for his maker and for me and you.
All right, so we have two books here that's in regards to music, and one of the thing that originally we were just going to do the indie band survival guide by Randy Chirko and Jason Freehan, but I decided to request another music book called Music Success in 9 Weeks by Ariel Hyatt from cyberbooks.com, and just to have a compare and contrast, but having read both books, they're really not in the same league at all. In fact, they're really written for very different audiences, and
it's sort of the difference between they're almost barely even the same sport. It's almost like comparing softball to Major League Baseball.
Right, and to start off, we're going to talk a little bit about music success in 9 weeks. So I'm going to give you a little introduction. Is that it's a very fast, kind of like reads like a self-help book, and it's about 128 pages. But don't worry about that, because it's really only about maybe 50 pages. The rest are kind of like notes or exercise pages that's really doesn't have any text or anything like that, so don't let that page count really frighten you. It is kind of more on the expensive side. It's about retails about $34.99, which I thought was kind of expensive for what it is, but
128 page book, yeah, that's really quite steep.
Right, but I can understand it from a small time publisher, because I think they know that they're not going to sell a lot of copies, so that any copies that they do sell, they want to recoup some of that cost that went into creating the book. Anyway, so what do you think of this book? I want your pros on this first.
Well, I read the book in one night. As a matter of fact, I read it in one single sitting. It only took me about maybe an hour to read the entire book. And just like you said, it's 128 pages long, but a number of the pages in there are deal with exercises and things like that. And that doesn't really count toward actual text. The text that remains is very, very concise. Ariel Hyatt writes with a very, very very friendly, very personable tone. All the material that she discusses in the book is stuff that she has dealt with personally. So obviously, well, you know, she's speaking from a standpoint of expertise here. And basically, she explains everything that you basically need to know to do PR for your own music.
I do want to touch on that personal writing style that she seems to have, and it's that it seems sometimes that it's too much, in my opinion, like that is almost like reading somebody's personal blog or something. Did you
ever
feel that?
Yeah, and
way?
that's one of the kind of a fine line to walk when you're writing something like this. You want to keep things personable. You obviously want to use yourself for examples, especially if you have a great deal of experience in that field, as she very obviously does. But one cannot let that that personal angle completely overwhelm everything, because then it turns more into a memoir than an actual, here's what you should do. And at times, it does kind of cross that line into, well, here, this is just what I've done over the years. Okay, give it a shot.
You know,
it should be a little bit more focused toward here's what you as a musician need to do. Now, in that regard, here's an example of how this technique or this lesson or this specific approach worked out from my standpoint.
Well, that's the, part of the charm too, isn't it? I mean, it is kind of like a double-edged sword where it's kind of like, you know, can I take her seriously? And also at the same time, you know, when you're reading it, you feel like you can identify with her.
Right, and that's a good thing about that type of style. You know, it's clearly written from the point of view of somebody who is an insider in this business. And as she's talking about the things that she's done herself and have tried, that gives, and she's a successful PR person, that gives her a great deal of credibility. So when you read about her examples, you know that it's coming from the voice, the typewriter of somebody who has actually dealt with that. So you can trust
and
what
works.
She's talking.
Right. Right. So some of the tips that you like from the book, did you got anything out of that, or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that I particularly enjoyed is that she does know a great deal about the different means of getting information out there. And one of the points that she specifically makes is using Twitter to let folks know about what you're doing, especially for shows and things like that. Personally, I found Twitter, which is a website that, for those of you who don't know, it's a website that lets you basically post little one or two line kind of micro blog entries that just sort of say like, hey, we have a show tonight at 8 p.m. at Garfield Artworks in Pittsburgh, for instance. A lot of people use it to just say, oh, hey, I just got out of the bath. I'm going to the mall. You know, my cat just jumped in my lap. I dropped my pen. There's a lot of, you know, BS on there. But she really addresses how this site could be used for great effect, such as letting fans know about shows, letting fans know when releases come out. In that regard, it's really, really quite a handy tool. And I'm surprised. You know, honestly, I wouldn't have thought to use Twitter that way. I really wouldn't have. I've seen so many people just post goofy crap up there. You know, their baby just dropped the bottle out of the crib and stuff like that. That, you know, you kind of end up looking at sites like that as, oh, well, it's just obviously for stuff like that. And you don't realize that, wow, there's more that you can do with something like that.
You know what? I'm not a big fan of Twitter, but I think eventually. But okay, here's the thing with Twitter is that I get it. You know, I think the thing that people should use it for is kind of like as a text message system. And because text messages are very limited to, like, say, 140 characters, that I can see why Twitter have uniformed to that short burst of information. But people treat it as if it's like kind of like microblogging, where they're just doing, like you said, you know, eating a sandwich. And then people don't need to know that, but you know, people are going to use it to however they're going to use it.
Exactly.
But a band, I can. That's actually really cool. And people who can subscribe to Twitter can get the messages sent directly to the cell phone. And I think that's more useful when it comes to, you know, sending out a mass message.
Indeed.
In addition to emails and stuff. So, what do you think of her emphasis on building a large email list? Do you remember reading that last chapter? Or?
Yeah. Email lists are great. And, you know, email newsletters are absolutely essential. This is one of the things that Chert Kyle and Jason Feehan deal with in the Indie Band Survival Guide.
We'll get to that, actually.
But my only issue with maintaining a very large email database. Well, one, it's a great way of obviously staying in contact with fans. I mean, that goes without saying. But it just seemed to me that Music Success in 9 Weeks focused a little bit too much on email mailings.
You know, I thought the same way, actually. I felt the same way that a lot of this book really concentrated on the building your email list. But go on.
Right. And email lists are very important, but they're not the be-all and end-all of existence. Especially now, you know, back in the 90s, yeah, keeping a very good email list was probably the easiest way to get in contact with all your fans at once. But today, there are sites like Twitter, there's things like MySpace, online blogs, anything like that can be used to communicate to fans as well. So it doesn't really make sense to put as much emphasis specifically on email when there are other means of reaching fans that, quite frankly, I keep reading a lot of stuff over the last couple of years about the quote-unquote death of email, that people aren't using emails these days as much as they used to. They're using things like AIM, Twitter, text message services, and things like that to communicate with one another. But that does not mean that email is something that you should overlook, because emails allow you to address much more substantial things. You can email somebody an entire list of concert dates, which may very well be available on your website as well, and that's good. You want to make sure that you cover as many bases as possible. But when you're emailing somebody, you can send them a great deal more information than you could with just a text message or you know, spamming their AIM account or something like that. So there is a place and a time for that, but it's not about email alone. Email mailing lists are good. They're a part of the process, but they're not the whole process.
I do agree with that. You know, when you said the death of email, I want to add also the death of voicemail as well, because I never check my voicemail.
I rarely do either.
I actually prefer people to just text me the information. I mean, if they know they're not going to get me on the phone, that because I read my text message more than I do check my voicemail. And a part of the problem with voicemail is that it's a series of it's very time consuming. You have to log in, you have to punch in your number, you gotta sit and listen to the voice.
Someone ramble on and on and on.
And in some ways, when you mention email, it's kind of falls to that, where I won't read emails that I'm not particularly interested in.
Exactly. And,
So in some ways, I kind of treat it like it's a unlistened voicemail. Now, here's the thing with email, is that because of the business we're in, I do get subscribed to a lot of different email. Most of it I kind of want, but a lot of times I get added to mailing lists without my permission, which I'm okay with, but I think in some ways they really need to contact you first and ask you for your permission to. Yeah.
There's nothing I hate more than being signed up to receive emails from a mailing list that I did not personally sign up for.
Right, and Ariel actually addresses this in one of her chapter, where she saw, you know what, you need to at least talk to the person before you add them. Otherwise, it's just going to consider spam. And she is right. I mean, I consider it.
Absolutely.
But like I said, but at the same time, I kind of want it. You know what I mean? Because of I need to be in the know as far as music is concerned.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, so do I. But what usually works best is I've had, well, I signed up for an email newsletter for, some net label from Romania. I can't remember their name right offhand. But they have a related net label, some friends, I think, of theirs in Croatia. And the Croatian folks emailed me to ask me, hey, I see that you're a member of the one net label's mailing list. We do something similar. Would you like to be added?
Well, that's kind of cool, actually.
And that's awesome, because they gave me the chance to say yes or no. And of course, I mean, 9 times out of 10, if somebody emails me and say, hey, you want to be added to our mailing list so you can know about our new releases and stuff, I'm going to say yes. But don't assume that somebody is automatically going to say yes and just put them right on.
Life is too short, you don't have time to write and record your own songs. There's too much to do, you're running behind, and songwriting takes too long. So take a break and be our guest. Come to a place where the song's always new. Visit each day and let Beatnik Turtle write the song for you. At the Song of the Day.
So we have here the 300-pound gorilla, or 300-page book, The Indie Band Survival Guide. Now, why don't you recap on how you discovered this book, Derek?
Well, I was in a Barnes & Noble one day, and I was actually killing some time before a job interview. So I went to the music section and was looking at some of the new music books. I was actually looking for an updated copy of Lords of Chaos, which is a book about the satanic black metal underground in Norway. And I stumbled across this book, The Indie Band Survival Guide. And I figured, hey, got time to kill, have a look at it. So I took it over to the Starbucks in the Barnes & Noble and sat down and started reading it. And I read about 150 pages of it in just under an hour's time. And I discovered that basically this book is the one-stop shop for quite literally everything you need to know about making it as a band or as a musical artist without having to resort to a label whatsoever. Indie labels, major labels, any sort of labels. Except for, you know, those that you would obviously want to start for yourself, let's say.
You know what I really like about this book is there's a lot of different details that
is
not necessarily has anything to do with music, but they go into a lot of details about like maybe a picture format where they're talking about the different types of color. I mean, this is actually valuable information that you kind of, it's kind of nice to have in one book, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because there's a lot to branding and, you know, creating an identity for your band that goes above and beyond just making music. And what they deal with, for instance, is one of the things that I'm sure people have, you know, when someone decides, hey, I'm going to start releasing some of my music, they probably have thought, okay, well, one of the things I want to do is make flyers for the next show. But how many people, you know, have gone to, say, the local Kinko's to have a flyer or something printed up, and the guy behind the counter asked them, okay, do you have this in TIFF format, or you have
PDF
this in...
you got different formats you got to think about. You know,
and all the other many, many different formats, such as Pantone colors, etc. And you know, so people probably listening to this podcast are probably asking themselves now, well, it's called The Indie Band Survival Guide. Why are you talking about image formats?
It's actually pretty important, isn't it?
It's extremely important, and this is what this book is. See, to contrast this with Music Success in 9 Weeks. Ariel Hyatt's book is just sort of like an introduction. These are the basics that you need to know to get started. It's enough to get your ball rolling. There's enough information in there to educate you in, you know, what you need to do. But on the other hand, the Indie Band Survival Guide, whereas Ariel Hyatt's book is sort of like an introduction, this book is more like a reference book. It contains any and all information that you could possibly associate with networking, with printing up materials such as press releases and things like that, to, you know, what, for example, even what quality of MP3 you should encode your stuff when you put it on the internet. And it covers everything. So
it's a
much more comprehensive book.
Right, right. I mean, there's a lot of details, but I'm going to kind of give a broad introduction to people who might not know what we're talking about. But basically, this book is a guidebook. And it's not necessarily a cover-to-cover read, but it's more of a, you know, if you're interested in a certain thing, go ahead and read this chapter, because it kind of covers some of the topics you want. It's divided into two sections, which is basically getting prepared and then getting the fans once you master the first part, I think. And the first part basically covers, like, getting your image and brand into your inner website online. And then the second part is more of a publicity, distribution, getting booked, that kind of thing, when you're more of an established band, in my opinion. So, but... Yeah, I mean, I was actually interested in everything, so I read. I mean, some of it pertains to myself, even though I'm not in a band, but some of it actually speaks a lot to me. And then some of them are kind of like, it's kind of interesting to know. So it's actually really not necessarily written for a musician. I think a lot of people can get a lot of information just by reading the book. I mean, it's not necessarily for a musician, I guess, is my point.
What I would actually even go so far as to say is that the Indie Band Survival Guide is a good book for anyone who is interested in the music industry as it exists today, the true independent music industry, not the major labels, not even the big-time indie labels like, you know, Saddle Creek and stuff like that. This is a book for anyone who is interested in the DIY aspect of, and I don't want to say it's underground, because it's not underground anymore. I mean, very, very popular bands such as the Bare Naked Ladies, for instance, are using techniques that the authors, who have a band themselves, Beatnik Turtle, that's been phenomenally successful, and you know, they've never had a record label, they've never had a recording contract with anybody. They've done it all entirely themselves. And if you're a musician, obviously, a lot of what they're talking about could very well apply to you. But even if you're not, if you want to help promote musicians such as that, if you want to start a blog that covers completely independent artists, if you're just interested in, well, how does the process work? You know, what do you do in the first place? How do you even get started? This book covers all of that.
One of the nice thing about this book is that it's actually very affordable. I mean, $15. And
yep, $19.95.
Right, and if you get it online, it's probably a lot lower. It's probably going to be cost you $10.
And if that, you can go to Amazon.com and find copies of it for as low as like $8-$9.
Right, and you know what? I was actually thinking for Christmas, I was going to get a couple of these books and just give them out to... as gifts, because it's a very affordable price, and I think it kind of gives a really invaluable you know, collection of just information that, I mean, if you're at all interested in music, this is actually a great book for you.
Every one of my friends who have interest in music in one form or another are getting a copy of this year.
And anyway, so give me some of the highlights of some of the tips that you kind of picked up from reading the book that you liked and maybe will be acting upon.
Well, as a musician myself, I've kind of independently stumbled upon some of the methods and some of the things that the authors discuss actually in the book myself. However, God, I wish I would have had this thing, you know, at least 4 or 5 years ago when I really got started and playing out and stuff, because it would have made my life a lot easier. And the reason is the first section, Get Prepared. Like you said, this is not a book that you have to read from beginning to end. You can jump from chapters, read whatever you think is important to you, etc., etc. However, the book does have a logical workflow to it that explains, okay, first of all, this is where you need to start. The first thing you need to do is to establish an identity for your band, establish a web presence, etc., etc. And it tells you how to do every single step of that. Everything from just putting together a logo to figuring out what font you like. You know, what font when you put out newsletters and things like that, or posters. What fonts do you want to use?
that's actually a very, very important choice that a lot of bands just, it wouldn't even occur to them. All the information on different graphics formats for printing and for web design, all the information about how to set up your own web page is incredibly invaluable. But honestly, my favorite part of the whole thing was there's a chapter specifically dedicated to creating a unified image for your band,
right.
Which means creating, you know, how do you want your name to be spelled? How do you want, what kind of fonts, what kind of designs do you want? If you have a mascot, for instance, like the Authors band, Beatnik Turtle, has a Beatnik Turtle, obviously, as a sort of little, you know, mascot. My band has a 8-rayed chaos star that's kind of twirled so it looks like tentacles. Now, the cool thing about that is, you know, you don't have to spell out your whole band name or anything. You can put the little turtle on a button. You can put the tentacled chaos star on a button, and obviously that's going to indicate, you know, you don't have to put your whole band name on it. That one button has your complete identity on it right there, because you've got that iconography that is now associated with your project.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting, especially when I apply this to We Heart Music, it's when I was doing this by myself, a lot of the stuff that I was doing, I was doing it instinctively, just because, like, you know, I like this logo. I'm gonna try to represent this, or I like spelling the heart with an actual heart.
Exactly.
And over times, they put it to words what I instinctively did, and I think it's a great deal. And I think Beatnik Turtles, for the band that they are, I think they did the same thing where they kind of did this probably by instinct, and then realized that, hey, you know, this is what we did and this is why it's successful, and then put that into the book, which I thought, you know what, if I had read this, I would have understood what I was doing. And for a band that's maybe emerging or starting up, this is actually invaluable information that you will learn.
I'm going to come right out and say it. You need to get this book. Because, just like you said, when you started doing this stuff, you did a lot of stuff that you felt was instinctual. You know, like, this is just the right way to do it. And it's kind of cool to see that, you know, Randy Chertow and Jason Feehan have actually put it into print. Because, you know, for some people, that might not be instinctual.
Right.
I have a lot of background in teaching and working with people through, you know, PR and stuff like that. So to me, when I started, you know, really getting my band name out there and stuff, I used some of the skills that I developed through there. But, you know, there are people out there, they're just musicians. They write music. It might be a hobby. Maybe they want to really do something with it, but they're not sure what to do because, you know, they might not have our backgrounds or something like that.
Right. And
this book would provide,
give them a detail step by step. I mean,
exactly. And they assume, the best part about it is the authors assume only one thing, that you have some music or you have interest in doing some music, or have an interest in music just in general. That is the only thing they assume. Everything else they spell out in very, very clear terms. And they do mention, you know, their own band, of course, by way of example sometimes. But every time that they bring up their band, they just say, now, see, the reason why we're telling you to do this is it worked for us in this situation. It may not work for you if you do it the same way, but do understand that what we're here to do is, we're not trying to tell you, this isn't the Beatnik Turtle survival guide. They just use their own band as an example of, well, look, this is how it worked out for us, to establish A, their expertise, and B, that, hey, if it worked for them, it can work for you.
And I think it also lends a little bit of credibility that they're actually a musician writing for a musician.
Yes.
I don't know what else I can say about it. I do want to talk about that when they touch about web developers and websites and stuff, that they stress to have a contact page. Now, something like this, it may sound obvious to you and I, because but a lot of band websites do not have a contact page, and I know this from personal experience, because there's a lot of missed opportunities, because I would be trying to promote this band and there's no way of contacting them at all. And you know, like with the Beatnik Turtle, if they didn't have their telephone number or email address, that they would have missed this ABC Disney opportunity that they had.
Exactly.
If the band actually bought this book, they would have known that, hey, we should incorporate a contact page. Because the book really details
a lot. You'd be amazed how many people overlook that.
And you know, the website, and most bands actually just have MySpace, which I have always told bands that you don't want just a web with you don't want just MySpace or Last.fm. You need to have your own website, because to me, you're not taking your music very seriously when you don't have your own website. Yeah, that's my perception of it. But if I feel that way, I'm sure a lot of people also feel that way as well.
And when you're trying to create an identity for your band, you know, something that is recognizably, you know, as soon as somebody takes a look at the way something is spelled or the font that you're using, they should associate that with your band. And you can't have stuff like that on sites like MySpace.
Yeah.
MySpace already has, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different formatting stuff that you can do and whatnot.
Oh,
but nonetheless, when you go to a MySpace page, you're not going to, say, Beatnik Turtle's page. You're going to Beatnik Turtle's MySpace page.
Right.
When you go to just Beatnik Turtle's page, for instance, you got everything. That site is 100% about them.
Right.
It's
very
not
personalized.
Something that's taking advantage of another service like MySpace. All of the imagery, all of the branding, everything about that band's page is 100% their own.
Yeah, and I'm not saying like do not have a MySpace, because MySpace actually offers a valuable thing for your band.
Absolutely.
But it should be kind of like considered like a side thing, where it's an extra that you give fans,
mm-hmm.
not that it's your main page. And I think a lot of bands that have MySpace as their primary page, I kind of don't feel I don't feel that they're taking their music seriously. And
exactly.
All right. Anything you wanted to also mention before we wrap this up?
Not particularly. I think we pretty much covered everything there.
All right. You know, I wanted to mention that this book also in the foreword says that a lot of it is, this isn't just a guide or an idea or a theory, that they suggest that you actually apply some of these tactics. You know, I'm going to try to do some of that, how it applies to me, but I'm going to try to exercise some of the stuff that they have gone through, because it's all really interesting. It applies to a lot of people, you know.
I've already begun to apply stuff to my own projects. Hell, it's already starting to show results.
Awesome.
But one thing I also want to point out is they do have a extensive and very, very, very useful webpage at just indiebandsurvivalguide.com. Indie spelled I-N-D-I-E, not indie as in Indiana Jones. The website features a lot of information that's in the book and includes more supplemental information to go along with certain topics in the book that the authors just felt like, well, this isn't absolutely essential that it goes in here, but this may be something that readers, having read a certain chapter, say, or read about a certain thing like MP3 encoding, may want to know more about it. Well, you can go to the website and actually read those kind of, like, I would regard them as online appendices to the actual chapters. The information in there isn't vital, but it's very, very useful. And you'll also discover that a lot of the information from the book is available on the website, too.
You know what I find really interesting is that they license their copyright to Creative Commons.
Yes.
Which means that you can basically copy any text from it as long as you give credit to who wrote it, and I think
I'm a big proponent of Creative Commons myself.
Right, and I think this is actually really good. If you, let's say, you can't afford that $10 to buy the book, you can actually probably read a lot of it online for free. And
exactly.
and they want that, which is, I think, is great. I mean, but you know, I think for $10, you really, there's no excuse, really. I mean, and even if you've already read it online, it's really nice to have it in a portable device where, you know, you can take along with you on a train or.
And as I always like to tell people, what, honest to God, paper is the best storage medium in the world. I mean, yeah. That website, it may have all the same stuff as the book, but you know what? One day that website might not be there because your internet connection went down or something. But unless you lose the book under your sofa or something like that, you're going to have that physical copy of that book for hell until you decide to give it away or somebody steals it from you.
So the owner of a red and black Land Speeder vehicle ID THX1138, please return to your craft. You are parked in a no-hover area.
I just finished an EP of odd soundtrack... Well, I don't want to say soundtrack pieces. Just various odd little... soundscapes and whatnot based on the film THX 1138.
That's George Lucas?
Yep, movie? Very first film. And pretty much his best film.
I actually bought the DVD a while back. I think I've watched only part of it. I think I got to a point where there was like no sex in the future or something.
Yeah.
Like, wow, this is not going. I mean, it feels like it's like 1984. You know, like,
yeah, it's a very sort of... post-apocalyptic type of film.
He actually named his company after the film, his sound company. Well, anyway, so speaking of the THX, what are you doing with that? Is it just sound bites?
Actually, no. I decided that I was going to create basically just songs in, not even really songs, but just in some cases odd electronic landscapes, audio sculpture based on the film. And surprisingly enough, it doesn't involve any samples of sound or anything like that taken from the film, because I wanted this to be rather than a sort of remix of sounds and audio structures from the film. I wanted it to be a completely separate sort of like project inspired by the film, but not necessarily dependent on it for sound or for ideas.
Is it ambient or?
Actually, a lot of the stuff has pretty like heavy, skittery, insane beats to it, because a lot of the film, like one of the things that I wanted to do with the film is a lot of the film itself is ambient sound. It's full of these incredible sound collages that I didn't want to do the same thing because it's already been done in the film. So I want to do something a little bit different. So it's a little bit more like a cross between ambient and really weird, skittery, futuristic sounding IDM stuff like Aphex Twin and Otto von Schirach.
And this good looking fella, well, he sat next to me. I told him my story and he offered sympathy. But I was suspicious of his new Blundstone boots. Now I'm not the type to get concerned easily, but he asked me for my name, my number and my residency. And I knew this boy, he weren't looking for no love. No, this boy, he wasn't looking for no love. I killed his boy. He wasn't undercover.
I don't really have anything music to add. You know what? I've been reading what other people are writing on WeHeart Music, and I think Sally just came back from a 6 weeks vacation in Europe. And,
wow!
So she just she wrote about Sal Kimber's, which I ended up checking out, and I actually really like. Sal is basically from the countryside out of Australia, and she definitely has a very distinct country accent. Now, you know, that's actually kind of interesting, because in America, you know, you get people from the country, and then they have this very distinct, like, country twang accent to them. Well, anyway, and it's very charming, because because some of the words that she say, like something like, say, if you say clever, you know, it's clever, right? But I think she pronounced it like cleaver, and which just sounds really funny to me. Yeah, but I actually really enjoy it. So yeah, thanks, Sally, for introducing me to some of the band. And actually, that's one of the cool thing about Reed and We Heart Music, is that I get introduced to a lot of new and different types of music that I wouldn't necessarily like know about. And
I discovered a band called I'm sure I don't remember the name right offhand. Let's see. I have it here. Canvas Solaris. I discovered recently from a We Heart Music entry. And they're a sort of all-instrumental prog rock band that sounds a lot like early Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, only with a little bit of a metal kind of touch to it, which I guess you could say their closest... You could probably compare them most to Porcupine Tree these days. But their album, The Atomized Dream, is just... It's mind-bending.
Wow. Huh. Do you have any, like, besides when... Did you want to use that song or anything? Like, we kind of have to pick a song to end.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually would be a good song to end on is I recently got the new Lady Hawk single, Dusk Till Dawn, and there are two mixes on it. One's by Pascal Gabriel, and the other one by Tom Elmhurst. They honestly sound almost exactly alike, but what an incredibly good dance song.
Is it pretty noisy, though? Because I think I downloaded Lady Hawk's remix album or something, and it was just noise. I mean,
yeah, their remix album I recall being really, really noisy, but this is straight up four on the floor new wave dance stuff that sounds like something that Gary Numan probably would have been doing circa like 1984.
Well, I'm paying £10 a month.
That's really good.
And I get like I get 300 minutes and I get 300 text.
Do you ever like go over? Or
Yeah, on the odd occasion, because of my job, I actually earn go over sometimes, so it can go from like £10 a month up to about £45 a month, but that's on like rare occasions, you know.
Actually, I text more than I call people. I think it's texting is probably more reliable.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah, but I'm just... by the time I've actually sat there, I'm rubbish with phones. I keep getting phones every few weeks.
Yeah.
And then like every time I lose them, and then I'm like trying to figure out how to text on the darn thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and every phone is a little different, you know. Especially.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Anyway.
My last one, I just sat on and snapped it in two, and it was had to tape it together with sellotape. I only needed it just to go in my van at work, and then I dropped it on the floor. No, what was it? I sat on it and it broke eventually, so I had to throw it in the bin.